Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
We are thrilled to have Will Scott here, the co-founder of Search Influence. Scott, great to have you.
Thanks, Seth. It's nice to be with you.
Well, look, I've known of you and followed your writings and gotten to talk, chat with you at conferences over the years. What excites you right now in the world of search?
I think something that we're spending a lot of time thinking about is actually advertising. Oddly enough, we've been working more and more with larger kind of institutional clients, particularly universities and medical facilities. And what we're finding is that particularly over the last year, when their focus is on pretty specific lead generation, that deploying ads is a great way to get us there. But as always, you know, I've been doing SEO since 2000, so it's always near and dear to my heart.
It's so funny because for us, I come from the legal vertical. That's where we cut our teeth, and we've expanded beyond some degree. But SEO was my passion first, but obviously paid search is part of it. And as I opened the agency, Blue Shark, TV advertisers who had brand, as I'm sure your institutional clients do, that the advantage and what we have seen over some of the recent algorithm updates, there's been a huge advantage to those people with brand. I'm curious to know, as you've added paid search to the mix, which for many of these clients, one of the things we've seen, just like brand, bringing branded searches through traffic through the site, that paid search, one of those sort of like dirty secrets that Google wouldn't acknowledge for a long time, but the fact that paid search with those clicks coming through and the traffic, they it does have a huge impact positively on search.
Yeah, I think anything you can do to develop brand is going to be beneficial for search, right? Because that whole, how do you demonstrate authority? You demonstrate authority by getting people to search for you by name. So to my mind, the things that we do around brand building, whether that's paid search or display advertising, are going to have a big impact. You talked about TV. One of the things that we're starting to work with a fair amount is OTT and digital display. And we're really excited about the opportunity to be present in those new places where people are starting to engage with content.
Yeah, no. In the legal space, there's that. I'm playing around a lot with the pre-roll on YouTube, things like that. The opportunities are huge. For somebody who has been so plugged in, writing for Search Engine Land and other places over the years, I know that you're a professed non. You don't like to chase algorithms changes, and I get that. But how have you seen things develop over time? Brand is certainly a major factor. But when you're working with clients, is it still the fundamentals of content and links, or are there other things that you're sort of finding helps put some gasoline in the engine?
Yeah, I know that this idea is now a few years old, but I was really happy when people started coming out with actual quantifiable data that indicated that site authority drives local search rankings as well. So behind the spammers who are, stuffing keywords into their names, the strongest sites, when proximity is not the key indicator, seem to win. So as somebody who's been doing SEO for 20 years, it's gratifying to me to think that we could do all of the things that we've always done, build good content, optimize for the way that people are searching, and then develop site authority through inbound links and have that big of an impact throughout the ecosystem. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and this is a conversation, a common theme of this podcast has been the spam in local search, that it's really, and I just presented at PubCon, and in doing so, I thought for a moment that it might have thinned out. Much of the research we did, just trying to sort of prove certain stuff, not the research we presented, but trying to find some examples right leading up. I'm like, finally, but the keyword, the power of the keyword in the name, combined with the fact that they really don't have a great protocol for culling out spam. It's just one of these incredibly frustrating. You live through the algorithm changes that cleaned out link spam and made it much, much harder to play that game. And thankfully for those of us that play the game the way we do, that was a good thing. What are your thoughts? Do you think that, you know, that we will see Google get to the point where they, for example, use the green check mark from their Google screen process in the three pack? Are they going to end up having to move to places to fight spam? Because what they're doing right now doesn't seem to work particularly well on the local search.
Yeah, I think that the, I think that they're trying with things like the trusted providers, with things like local search ads, they're trying to get in a place where they really can kind of validate that business. But when it comes to actual organic local search, I don't get that it is driving enough. It's not driving enough sort of algorithmic intent that much about it, right? It's a blip on their radar if a handful of bad actors, even if it's a big handful, are spamming that system.
Right. And that's what I'm getting. It's not statistically significant for their macro, but in our little fishbowl, it's significant. You know, in professional services, it's a cat and mouse game that's, you know, you don't always feel like you're winning.
No, and I tell you, I think I'm especially glad that, that Jason Brown and some of Joy Hawkins' team are spending so much energy identifying this stuff and trying to smack it down. And I do believe that we talk about this when we are looking at local search rankings for clients. One of the things that we do, and I think it is a lot to the credit of the local U crew, is we look for bad listings and we try to report them. We look for duplicates, we look for spammy stuff, and just getting that stuff out of the way, I think, can have a big impact for local search results.
Right. And I put there two different categories. There's the ones that are completely, created with nothing else. And then there are ones attached to legit sites. And to date, there hasn't been any. You're like, okay, so they take it down, so you do another one. Joy has been a guest on the show, and we've talked about it, as well as others in the space that do it. It's great that they're able to knock them down, but it's insane that there's an entire industry doing that and that Google can't start putting some procedures in place to cull that world. Now, again, take your point, Will, that you have the, it's not, maybe not statistically significant to the larger world as it is, but for these different, very competitive spaces, it's created a cottage industry for reporting stuff, which should frankly not need that to cultivate the legitimate results.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I think that it shouldn't exist, but the unfortunate reality is it does exist. And Google, except maybe in Australia, is big to take anybody else's input. And so for me, I over the last few years, I've adopted a meditation practice. And so I do my best to try to identify those things that I can actually have an impact on and those that I can't. And so what I can have an impact on, reporting the spam, clean up duplicates, but I don't have nearly enough Google stock in my portfolio that they're going to listen to me when it comes to their internal business.
So what you're telling me is the triathlons didn't get you to that happy place, and you had to add meditation on top of that to make it to get you to the Zen place.
Anything we can do, right? It's all. But I've been having this, and I have to say, we're recording this only a day or so after our industry learned that we lost somebody that a lot of people felt really fondly about, Hamlet Batista, to COVID. And so I've, not to get all melancholy here, but I've been thinking about this, that there's all of these things which you think should be, transformative, right? Like, 7.5 years ago, I had a heart attack, which is what started me on the triathlon road. And as you may remember from some early local U events, I've had some anger management issues from time to time too. So all that taken together, you know, that transformation, I think, that we're looking for on any one of these events, it doesn't come, right? It's a trigger to hopefully better action. And I think that to me, the single biggest lesson that we can take away in work and in life is accept the things you cannot change and work on those that you can.
You know, wise words. And I got to just say, physically watching you here, you seem like a different person. You seem like you know, with age comes wisdom. So it's a cool to see you over the years. It seems like you're in a great place now. So congrats on whatever you are doing.
Thanks, Seth.
My
Look, I only wish I'd gotten started 20 years earlier, but you know, don't we all?
Yes. So my question is based on this corporate work that you're doing, these what I call, you know, the macro world, what are some of the lessons you've learned working with these larger organizations that you think are could trickle down to us who are, you know, with what I'll call the micro world with local search, et cetera? Are there any lessons that you any truisms or things you've picked up that you think are would be helpful down the food chain?
I am forever amazed at the extent to which people don't know the things that we think are common knowledge, right? So just to give you know, my example that I often go to is back in 2006, before there was local search, you know, when local search was a well localized title tag, we were approached by folks in the plastic surgery industry, and I said, "You got to be kidding me. There's no room for anybody to do work in this area, right? It's got to be completely saturated." And so we spent the next 5 years just killing it in plastic surgery. So to my mind, a lot of the things that we take for granted are still really not understood, even by folks whom we think should be relatively savvy marketers. A great example of that is canonicalization and duplicate content, right? It's something we've been talking about for a decade, you know, on stages and in the bars after the conference has ended, but it is still a huge deal. We work with a department, a couple of departments actually, at Tulane University, who is just about four blocks out my back door, and they are, you know, they have a big master site, and then each of the departments have their own individual silos. So in our case, it's SOPA.tulane.edu, SOPA for School of Professional Advancement. And when we started working with them, there were at least three prior iterations of that domain, because SOPA was a new name to them when we started working with them. There were three prior iterations of that domain name and a development site hanging out there. And so to us, it's just simplicity itself to look for duplicate versions of the site and get rid of them. But it just amazed me that this organization that spends millions of dollars a year on their digital product isn't thinking about this, right? So to me, if I'm talking to other marketers, you know, a lot of times they'll say, "These are things everybody should know," right? And I say, "Yeah, sure. There are things everybody should know, but the reality is they don't. And just because we've been talking about it for the last decade doesn't mean that it's made its way over there." And I think it's important just not to discount things because we've been talking about them as everybody knows this, and it's not worth having that conversation with prospective customers.
You know, I get it more than you can believe. You know, I've always spoken within the legal conferences. And by the way, the first one back in September is going to be in New Orleans. So hopefully get
Oh,
to see
nice.
you in person, and we'll all be inoculated, et cetera, by then. But, you know, one of the things as I prepared for a PubCon presentation was, as an attendee for many years, watching you from, you know, from the audience, you know, that there was always this idea of the to me it was the it was a huge sort of to overcome and present there. I thought that I had to come at the highest possible level because I was thinking of you as my audience member.
Yeah,
And what
right.
I realized when I saw it, because I did, you know, I spent a lot of time preparing it, the presentation got slotted as advanced, and I realized that, like, the target is not you. And that I've always thought of it as, because to me, PubCon has always been about the people in the hallways. And you mentioned, literally, I've been to those drinks talking about canonization, that you really, that the people that you end up selling into, especially when you're even with these multi-million dollar operations, that you are very often bringing fundamentals to the execution, not the, you know, you're saying, when I started the question saying, hey, it's the fundamentals of high quality content, authoritative right. links, the site structured so that the Google bot can know what's there, not confused. You're basically, it comes full circle to, hey, just get the basics right, which is not nothing, you know, especially at scale, and that, you know, executing on that. And that's ironically something that I've taken a hit for sometimes, and that, well, it's not, you're not being sexy. I mean, there was a period where geofencing was the rage, and it's like, you know, and the guys who were Yodel salespeople were now, you know, selling geofencing. I'm like, look, it may get there. Maybe you won't be the first guy who figures it out, but just get localized content and localized links. You're going to do well when this is right. Like Ella says, everybody's going to move into it. You might lose money for the first month, not being ahead of the curve, but the fundamentals are going to work 9 times out of 10 compared to whatever the sort of exciting bright lights are.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's funny. And we come across these examples all the time. So, you know, for this client at Tulane, they were working with somebody else who had built a blog on a separate domain, completely separate domain. I don't remember what it is. But we talked to them for over a year and finally convinced them to move that onto their domain into a subdirectory, right?
Right.
So not even a subdomain.
I spend much of my day with that exact discussion with people.
Yeah. I mean, because there's all these blog sites out on, in your world, FindLaw, Trulia, et cetera, right? And if you can just get them moved onto the master domain.
We let FindLaw do its own thing so we can compete against it. But yes, point taken.
So this blog site, we moved it from a unique domain into a subdirectory. And a year later, we had an 890% increase in traffic.
You're preaching to the choir here. There's a guy in the legal space who sells blogs, and he's always like, it has to be a separate blog. You're not a real lawyer if you don't have a separate blog. I'm like, stop the insanity. Again, you can have both. You're already have a business. The fact that it's on a law firm site versus a standalone blog, if the content is good, you're going to get your traffic. And when you do that 1-2 punch of the authoritative site, in your case, an EDU, rather than saying, hey, we're going to try to like create it from scratch. When you get that juice coming down from the subfolder, just incredible.
Well, but let's take that idea and bring it down to the local level, right? Okay. Which is, what do we learn there? We learn that an authoritative site is going to have much more impact regardless of what you do to it, right? So basic blocking and tackling of SEO, which is bring the third-party blog onto your own site. And if it's an authoritative site, bing, bang, boom, you're going to have tremendous results, right? I'm not saying that 890% increase in traffic didn't have something to do with our brilliance, but it was, at the end of the day,
it's your strategy, nobody's saying, hey, you're crazy. It's a best practice. The old, you know, the subdomain didn't get those results, and there are exceptions to every rule. There are people in legal that use blogs as a link wheel that work really, really well for many years. And if it works, God bless. But, you know, what you're saying is I go to the conference, I speak to people, I have my own portfolio. This is the best practice. And when you did it, shockingly, it worked.
Right. But so taking that back again to the very local level and where we started with this idea that the basic blocking and tackling of SEO benefits local, right? So what did we have as a given, as an engineering constraint? We had an authoritative site that we could work with it. Now, if I'm a, you know, if I'm a local practitioner, whether I'm a law firm, a doctor, or a roofer, the first thing I need to do is make sure that my site has some semblance of authority, which thankfully in a local context is a lot easier. So at that point, you're back to non-sexy SEO. How do I get some links that are locally relevant that aren't spammy? How do I develop content that's actually going to speak to the questions that my customers are asking, right? And so that's what I, after 20 years in SEO and, you know, 25 years working online, I love the fact that we can still have the same conversations and still have some impact.
Talk to me about the building of an agency. I'm the accidental agency owner. You know, I was an end user that loved it so much and geeked out and said I can do it better than others and started my vertical. What are some of the sort of things that you've seen as an agency that you've developed in order to help scale your knowledge and brilliance?
Yeah, I think it's a tough question, especially right now, right? Because I think that we've had 13 out of 15 great years, right? The last year, obviously, I think nobody's expecting that, and it turned out that we were a little bit overinvested in tourism and hospitality clients, right? So last year was not the year to be an agency owner.
At least on that side of the fence.
Right. The good news is that it wasn't 100% of our portfolio, but it was a pretty big chunk. A couple of years prior to that, we had a big partner who was reselling for us who decided to take all our stuff in-house. And since they had an entire floor full of lawyers and at One World Trade, there wasn't a lot that we could do about it. But the lesson for us there was about client concentration. Right. And I think both of these lessons are similar, which is in that case, we had half of our business with a single client. And in 2020, we had about 40% of our business in an industry. Right. And I don't think any of us could have foreseen something that would have taken out an entire industry like it did. But shockingly enough, as the year went on, we started to re-sign. We started to bring back some of those particularly the kind of destination clients, and also added some who were opening new businesses, believe it or not, in hospitality during a global pandemic. But I think that if I was to walk down what are the handful of lessons that I think anybody who is thinking about starting an agency or who is building an agency right now should consider, they are, first and foremost, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? Because if you are not good at managing cash and you have all of your eggs in one basket, you're going to be looking for a job, right? The second is really leverage the power of your team, whether it's internal or external, right? I don't know nearly as much as we know, and to my mind, the greatest benefit that I've gotten as an agency owner has been my interactions with other agency owners and with other folks who are in the space. I will go to my grave thankful that I had the benefit of people like Mike Blumenthal and David Mim and everybody else who has been, supportive of our process. The third is, and this is really important, and only something that I've learned over the last few years is, forget about ego. There's nothing proprietary. It's just execution, right? There's no secret sauce. It's just doing the work. I could open up our internal training documentation and let some aspiring entrepreneur get in there and digest 100% of it. And if they don't execute, then what is there?
Which is what allows you to speak at conferences and share so much, in that you're not really, it's the execution of the work.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have the commitment to developing processes and people, then all the knowledge in the world isn't going to help you. And that's, so I think those are probably a good starting point. But the fourth, so our company values spell charged, and the H is for hungry. And hungry for us is the constant acquisition of new knowledge. Because even though 80% is the same as it was 20 years ago, there's that 20% that if you can continue to grow and learn, and as we're adding new members to the team who don't have those 20 years of experience, they have to gain it. That hungry piece, the constant acquisition of knowledge is I think critical in any industry. but especially so in ours.
You know, in our remaining time, one of the things I love talking to people, you know, who've seen everything, you know, you've spoken from stage, you've heard what the other experts are out there. What are some of the things that you hear spoken that you sort of common myths that are out there that get perpetrated? You see, you know, with your lab, you see the results when you try things. Are there any things that are out there that people think of as practices that they should be doing, but you're like, yeah, it doesn't, this isn't, and I'll give you an example. I see that a lot of people in the local space, I mean, geotagging photos is the be all and end all. You know, are there any things like that that are professed, but you sort of, you call BS on?
Yeah, I always try to help people understand, you know, there's people refer to a duplicate content penalty, right? And I try to help them understand it's not that it's a duplicate content penalty. It's just that the cardinal rule of SEO is don't confuse Google, right? If you confuse Google, they're going to make decisions in a way that you don't want them to. And so the, you know, we had a guy, and this is, man, this is probably maybe 2008, who was a Yahoo seller. And when, you know, literally he had, so now how people build out their Amazon shopping cart, in 2008, it was Yahoo that people were doing that on. And he had a lot of content that was getting scraped by other sites. And I said to him, you don't have a content problem. You have a link building problem, because through good link building, you can drive your site authority, and you can especially affect the authority of those individual pages. And that is going to be the thing that, you know, that helps you help Google understand that you really are the authoritative source for this content.
Interesting.
That's a big one. I think, you know, the another one that I think is people are starting to move away from, but that I think is still really important, is thinking about your content from Google's perspective, that site structure still does really matter. Going back to some of those, you know, Greg Gifford did a great thing a few years back on content silos. And I think that there's still real learning there. And new SEOs, and particularly marketers who are tasked with SEO, who didn't grow up in it, tend to believe that Google is omnipotent and omniscient, right? And our job as marketers is to feed Google the information in the most digestible possible way, so that we don't run the risk of confusing. And this is where, you know, people think sitemaps no longer have value. Sitemaps still have huge value, because they can be, especially if they're linked from every single page, they start the crawl. They're the thing that helps Google understand what is it that's most important.
And look, in the local space, you're preaching to the choir, that's the silos are everything. And it's the biggest debates we have internally are, you know, when you have two terms, let's say you have a criminal defense lawyer and you have a criminal term that you want, that's a money term, and a DUI term. Do you put them both on the homepage? Do you put a DUI page on the second page? If you have DUI on the homepage and it's DUI landing page, will you confuse Google? And I would have a lot more hair if I didn't have to process through how, you know, you want the leverage of the homepage at the same time, you know, the secondary page can do that. But then if you try, then you sort of try to hedge and get both, and it becomes problematic. So those are real issues that we struggle with on the local level.
The other one that I think is that people are still kind of coming to grips with is that blogging for its own sake probably doesn't have any value anymore, right? That there are, and I, you know, we're guilty of it too, where we'll publish a couple of blog posts a month for a client, but as the idea that frequency of publication is going to drive significant value, I think is coming to an end.
Or is it good? Meaning there are different things you can do. Something we've struggled with is as sites mature, that updating content rather than just adding pages of content, you know, you have, you know, over a 6-year period, you may have the structure of content that you need. Now the question is, can you consider like almost like a building that's constantly, a bridge that's constantly being painted. As soon as they finish at one end, they start at the other end. You know, that to me, there you can be taking that 1,000-word page and making it 1,500 words and adding new, you know, adding new differentiators, adding video, you know, adding picture, whatever it is that you're improving, not just building volume for the sake of volume.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I think that the thing that really kind of interests me right this second is this idea of a content gap analysis, right? Like when you look at, particularly for bigger terms, even some local terms, if they're really competitive, I think looking at the gap between where you are and where the leaders in the SERPs are, there's a couple of things that it can do for you. You know, one is it might show you that content, this is the thing that's going to win, written word content. It might show you that it's got to be video or it's got to be something else. But what we're learning more and more is that when we look for the gaps, even though we've got the same words, we're not using enough of them. So to your point, it used to be good enough to put up a 500-word page on a topic and have it rank well. But now for some of the really sort of higher head terms, you might be writing 3,000 to 5,000 words, which is, you know, that's 6 months of your 300 to 500-word blogging budget, right? Is to produce that really high quality content.
I get it. In our space, the we have to put a large budget towards the content. That is, that has been one of the things we've seen pay huge dividends. Any final words of sort of advice out there? You've given us a lot of nuggets, a lot of good stuff, a lot of good themes. But what are any parting words to SEOs who are aspiring? What 2021? What would you where would you turn your attention?
Maybe it's my advancing years, but I'm going to say, keep it simple. Start with the basics and make sure that you've got those covered before you start getting too concerned about the next algorithm update or, you know, this or that social channel that's coming up as an opportunity to drive tons of business. The reality is, the vast majority of business that's going to come through any website is going to start at Google. And if you can do the things that are going to make you attractive there, great. And if you can't win fast enough with that, buy some ads until you get there and you'll get what you need. But you know, keep it simple and life is a lot easier.
Well, that was awesome. Great words. Thank you so much for your time here. I can't wait till we get to see you in person and get to sit there and talk late night about the interesting things that are the nuances beyond the basics. But I'm with you. Just executing on the basics really does for most people get them most of the way where they need to be.
And I always tell my team, just if it's new to them, it's news, right? Just because you've known it forever doesn't mean that the client you're talking to has that same level of understanding, and it's our job to bring them there. So don't worry that it feels cliche. Give them the information and hopefully they'll understand that that it's going to have a positive benefit.
Well, thank you so much. Can't wait to see you in person.
Thank you, Seth. Appreciate you asking me to do this.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.